I'm Amy Eddings in for Brian Lehrer here on WNYC. Good morning. Thanks so much for tuning in. On Friday, we heard the good news. The February jobs report exceeded expectations and showed encouraging job growth. But earlier in the week, a new report on student loan debt from the New York Fed turned up much more disturbing numbers. The outstanding student loan balance is now at about $870 billion, still more than the total credit card debt in this country. Over a quarter of borrowers have past due balances, and 47%, nearly half, of the 37 million people with student loans are in deferment or forbearance, meaning that they've hit the pause button on their loans because they're having trouble making payments. Joining me now to talk about student loan deferment and forbearance is Anya Kamenetz, senior writer for Fast Company. She's also author of DIYU, Edupunks, Edupreneurs, and the Coming Transformation of Higher Education and Generation Debt, How Our Future Was Sold Out for Student Loans, Bad Jobs, No Benefits, and Tax Cuts for Rich Geezers, and How to Fight Back. Welcome back to WNYC, Anya.
Thanks, Amy.
From this report, we learned that borrowers with student loans are having much more trouble making payments than previously thought. Why is this a more accurate picture than we've had before?
Well, basically what they did was they realized that the old way of figuring out who was behind on their loans was counting all the people that were still in school and don't have to pay the loans back yet. And so when you exclude those people from the picture, you get the numbers that are in delinquency and default actually doubling. So 27% of people are behind on their loans, meaning we can tell that because their balance on the loan is not changing from month to month, or it's actually growing from month to month.
Listeners, the phone lines are open now for your questions on your student loan deferment and forbearance and debt for Anya Kamenetz, author of Generation Debt and DIYU. Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. If you are a borrower and your student loans are already in deferment or forbearance, we also want to know, what's your plan? How long do you expect it will be before you can start making regular payments on those loans? We've been hearing that nearly half of all borrowers are in deferment or forbearance. We want to hear from you if you're in that situation. 212-433-9692. Leave us a comment at WNYC.org. Just click on the Brian Lehrer Show or tweet us at Brian Lehrer. Let's talk about the report's findings on loans in deferment and forbearance. First, Anya, can you define those terms for us?
Sure. So they're basically, what they both mean is you don't have to make payments temporarily because of whatever condition that your life is in at the time. And the most common type of deferment is when you're still in school. So if you are still in school or you go back to school under a qualifying program, you get pretty much automatic deferment. You can also get deferment for military service. And then there are the requested deferments, which come because of unemployment or because of low income. And the same thing is true with forbearance. Basically, forbearance can be a little bit easier to get. You also get it by requesting it, and it can be because of unemployment or because of other personal circumstances like an illness that you need to temporarily hit the pause button on your loans.
How easy is it to qualify for deferment or forbearance?
Well, you really have to make a strong distinction here between private and federal student loans. Pretty much for both private and federal student loans, they're not going to make you pay the loans while you're still in school or if you go back to graduate school. But for private loans, of course, the interest is going to continue to accrue even while the loan is in forbearance, and that interest is going to be capitalized or added onto your debt. So a lot of people find when they're in deferment, when they're putting a pause button on their loans, that the amount that they owe is going to grow kind of alarmingly sometimes. In terms of how easy it is to get a deferment or forbearance, again, you know, if you have a private loan, it's really up to the discretion of the lender, the Sallie Mae or the Citibank or the Wells Fargo, as to whether or not they're going to give you that. And you need to obviously have a lot of documentation, a lot of evidence on whatever your income is or whatever your personal story is. But a lot of people find that it's a lot harder when they have the private loans to get them to agree. And, of course, you know, if you have an application in to get a deferment or forbearance, you have to keep making payments on the loan even while you are applying to stop.
So what does it tell us that nearly half of borrowers have this status?
Well, you know, I think the really honestly, the number to focus on is the 27% who are actually behind on their loans. The half that are in deferment include a very high percentage that are still in school, or they're also in graduate school. So what it tells us is that then, you know, obviously the larger burden of loans is falling on the younger people, the people that are in school still, people that are under 30 or under 40. And many people may be going back to graduate school actually because they're hiding out from the job market right now, and they want to, you know, they don't think they're going to be able to pay back their loans if they were just out there trying to earn a living.
Jason from Queens, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Jason.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question regarding student loan forgiveness for teachers who are committed to teaching at a Title I school for, I believe it's 5 years. Specifically, speak to the high-need subjects like math, science, and special ed.
Thanks, Jason, for your call.
Sure. So there's two things here. One is any state programs that in many different states that, as he says, forgive loans for teachers. And the requirements for that really vary from state to state. I don't know what they are in New York State, but the other program is the National Program for Public Service Loan Forgiveness, and that encompasses not only teachers, but nurses and police officers and anyone who works for the government or for a nonprofit. And they can get their loans forgiven actually after 10 years of repayment and 10 years of employment in a qualifying occupation. So again, the state programs, the requirements really vary. The National Public Service Loan Forgiveness, it's 10 years of repayment.
And Sadie on Twitter had asked us, how do you actually know for sure the 10-year clock is counting down when you sign up for a social service forgiveness?
Well, basically, with public service loan forgiveness, it's any payment that's made, a qualifying payment in a qualifying repayment program that's made after October 2007. So a qualifying repayment program means the standard 10-year repayment plan or the income-based or income-contingent repayment plan, which we can talk about a little bit later. But basically, as long as you're employed in the field that we're talking about, the nonprofit or the government field, and you're making your payments, those payments, when you get accepted into the public service loan forgiveness, they're going to count against your loan and against the eventual forgiveness.
Anne from Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning. Hello. My question is, I took out my original college loans in the early 80s, and it was originally a $9,000 loan, and it bloomed to 30 with interest. And I've been making payments I couldn't make payments in the beginning. I had no money, but I've been making payments for the last about 15 years, and it's just not even really taking away the principal at all. And I guess my question is there any kind of statute of limitations? I had heard that the Obama administration was doing some work around these kinds of these 30-year student loans. I mean, my original was 90 or 9,000 and went up to 30. How can I deal with this?
Thanks, Anne, for your call.
Is there any way around it?
Right. There is no statute of limitations on a student loan. There are uncommon strengths and powers that the government has to recover their money. But the thing that you might be interested in is a rehabilitation of your loan. And what that basically means is if you enter rehabilitation, that you're going to renegotiate a new payment plan. You may end up with a consolidation loan, which is basically a new loan with new payments, and someone else might have charge of your loan. If you originally took out the loan from a lender, you may be able to get into the government's direct loan program. And the best resource I found to get information on all of this is a website called Student Loan Borrower Assistance. It's studentloanborrowerassistance.org, and it's run by the National Consumer Law Center, and it's got really, really extensive frequently asked questions and information on how to get into all of these types of programs.
I'm speaking with Anya Kamenetz, author of Generation Debt and DIYU, Amy Eddings in for Brian Lehr, and we are talking about student loans. Call us at 212-433-WNYC with your student loan issue, 212-433-9692. Anya, of the 37 million student loan borrowers in this country, nearly half are in deferment or forbearance. Is this report alarming, or is it actually good news that people are not burdened with making monthly payments at a time when unemployment is still high and wages are lower?
Well, it depends on how you look at it, Amy. I mean, you know, it's very good that people have options, and obviously deferment and forbearance are better than delinquency and default.
Right.
At the same, you know, which means, you know, delinquency is essentially, you know, falling behind on your loans. When you miss 9 monthly payments, you go into default. But at the same time, it's very bothersome that so many people have found that they're taking out loans that are out of sync with their job opportunities, or they're finding that when they graduate or they get their degrees that the job opportunities out there are not allowing them to pay back their loans. And that's why, you know, there's been a movement, and there's been some movement on the part of the federal government even, to hold colleges accountable for this. You know, colleges are offering these degree programs. They're charging a certain amount of tuition for them. If a large percentage of students find that they can't pay off their loans when they come out of school, there may be something wrong with the value proposition of what colleges are offering.
Desiree from Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Desiree.
Good morning. Hi. I was calling because I'm on income-sensitive payments. And my question is, I've been paying religiously on these loans for some time, but I noticed, like, the principal doesn't seem to be going anywhere, and I feel like what I'm paying is basically just covering the interest. And if that's the case, then I'm wondering if I'm just running in place by doing this. So I guess that's my question. Like, is this a advisable way to do it, or...
Yeah, Desiree, this is a really serious problem. You know, it's really good that people are able to bring their payments in line with their income, which is what income-sensitive and income-based repayment are supposed to do. But as you point out, when you lower the payment that much, you're actually not paying down on the principal. You're barely keeping ahead of the interest. And you're going to basically have that loan for its entire lifetime. And, you know, what that means is there is an end. At the very end of the tunnel, there is a light, which is that income-based and income-sensitive repayment program, your loan will be forgiven after 25 years. But that's 25 years of making that payment.
Right.
So I would say, you know, if your income has grown to a level where you have the ability to switch and to pay down your loan a little bit faster under standard repayment, even for a couple of years, if you can, you know, shove a lot of money into it, if you want to see that balance come down, you know, that might be something to consider doing. A lot of people find that the income-based repayment makes sense for them in the first couple of years after school, but, mm-hmm. You know, if you want to erase that loan from the books, the only way to do it is to go back into standard repayment.
Okay. Well, since I heard about the public service...
Oh, I'm sorry. Desiree, thank you so much for your call. Anya, what does it mean for the student loan system for so many borrowers to be in deferral or forbearance or to have past due payments? Don't payments finance other loans?
Oh, you mean for the entire system?
Right.
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I think that, you know, the student loan system is in transition right now. The federal government has taken over all federal student loans. There used to be loans that were made privately on the private market by entities like Sallie Mae, and now the Education Department is shouldering all of these burdens. And obviously, their books are based on an assessment that, you know, they're going to be getting money back from people that are paying. So eventually, there is going to be some financing problems, I think, from the, you know, from the point of view of the Education Department. And on the private student loan side, there's a liquidity problem as well. You know, if too many borrowers end up not paying back their loans or going into delinquency or default, there's going to be a credit crunch on the private loan side, where people are going to say, you know, maybe it's not such a good risk for us to make these loans anymore because they're not collateralized. You know, you don't put anything down when you take out a private student loan. And if no one's paying them back, then the private lenders may decide it's not a good risk.
You mentioned default. I thought student loans were one of the few loans that you can't walk away from.
Well, it's true that you cannot erase student loans in bankruptcy. It's very, very, very difficult. You have to prove a standard called undue hardship, which is very hard to prove. Default simply means that you are just not paying on the loan. Now, if you don't have the money and you don't send it to them, you know, that's what it means to be in default. And so in the sense that, you know, it's going to ruin your credit, it's going to be something where you're subject to all kinds of efforts from the federal government to recover the money. They can take your federal disaster relief payments. They can seize your IRS tax refunds. They can take your disability payments. But at the same time, I mean, default just means that, hey, you don't have the money and you're not paying it.
Huh. Alan from Long Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alan.
Hey, how are you, Annie? Thanks for taking the call. I have a question. You know, we took a loan when my wife was going to the nursing school, you know, and she's a registered nurse right now. And she works for a state hospital. But, you know, with all the expenses coming up, it's very hard for us to pay up this loan. Is there any way that she, being a state employee, can give have that loan forgiveness thing?
Thanks, Alan, for your call. Is there any loan forgiveness program on the state level?
Yes. Well, it sounds like his wife is eligible for public service loan forgiveness because if she works for a state hospital and she's a registered nurse, that would make her eligible. And the best independent source that I found for information on it, if he wants to follow up, is ibrinfo.org. That's ibrinfo.org. And it gives all the requirements for public service loan forgiveness. Again, all the payments that she's made under a standard repayment plan since 2007 should be eligible, make her eligible. And once she's made 10 years of payments, that loan should be able to be forgiven.
Walker from Brooklyn wrote on our website, what does it mean for your credit to have student debt or go into deferment and forbearance? I always heard student debt was not considered as bad as regular debt. Will the scale shift if this many people have student debt?
Well, the way that student debt negatively affects your credit is in the debt-to-income ratio, right? So if you have a really large loan and you have a small income, and then again, if you're in deferment or forbearance, that loan is not going down from month to month, as we've seen. It's actually maybe going up from month to month. And so that is also going to hurt your credit. However, deferment and forbearance is a lot better for your credit than delinquency and default. You know, you have a loan that's actually in collection or delinquency, that's going to be a much, much harder hit on your credit. So, you know, I think it's true that credit scores traditionally have not looked as negatively on student loans, but, you know, there's a limit to that. If you have a $100,000 student loan and you have a $20,000 income, that doesn't bode well for your ability to, you know, get new loans at good rates in the future.
Randall from Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My comment is I'm a graduate student, and I've got about $10,000 in undergraduate loans. They're subsidized at a low interest rate, and it seems that the system tried to keep me in school and tried to have me not pay off my loans. I could put my money in a CD. I get to pay the interest against my wages. Inflation will make it worth less eventually. Do you think there's anything to that, or does it just make more sense to pay it off?
Thanks, Randall, for your call. Do you understand that question, Anya?
Well, I guess what he's saying is, you know, if the lenders have various enticements that they want to keep you, you know, holding on to the loan.
Sure.
Right, exactly. And as long as you still have the loan and it's in deferment, then the balance keeps growing, the interest keeps growing, even if it's subsidized. And, of course, you know, our system is set up to allow people to pursue their educational goals. And so being able to defer payments while you're still in school is a good idea. As to whether or not it's actually a good monetary idea to, you know, not pay off your loan, I don't think so. I think if you have the income to do it, it's good debt to get rid of because, you know, as we mentioned, you can't get rid of it in bankruptcy, and you're not going to, you have a small chance of being able to walk away from it. So I would say, you know, pay down the loan if you can.
While you're in forbearance, loans keep accruing interest, and that's how debt can balloon, like Anne from Brooklyn, who had her $8,000, $9,000 loan balloon to $30,000. Is there a way to adjust your interest rate? I remember when I got out of college, my student loans were all at 9%. I'm sure the percentages are lower now, but over time, can you get the interest rate on your loan changed?
The best option for changing the interest rate on a loan is to get a consolidation loan. And basically, it's not that different from refinancing a house. When the interest rates drop, you may be able to get, it amounts to taking out a new student loan and putting your old loans under the new loan. But consolidation, you know, now is not a particularly great time to consolidate. You're going to want to wait until interest rates really drop and wait for your chance to do it. And, you know, at the time when that's possible, again, you don't want to necessarily get a private consolidation loan and put your federal loans under that private loan. You really want to stay in the federal program if you can.
Anya, we heard from a lot of callers in real distress. I mean, big numbers, $30,000.
Yeah.
You know, that's a whopper. And you mentioned that we really need to turn to colleges to help solve this debt crisis. What do you mean by that? What are some possible solution steps besides saying to people, work harder, try to find a very lucrative job and pay off those loans? There seems to be a larger systemic problem here.
Well, I really believe that there is, and that's why I followed up my book, Generation Debt, with the AYU, which is talking about how I think the higher education model needs to evolve, because we can't keep absorbing these tuition costs that go up at 5 and 7% a year. The Obama administration has recently announced a nationwide initiative to try to get colleges competing not to raise their tuition but to lower their tuition, and to have to explain why, if they're raising their tuition much more than other schools in their division, why it is that they're doing that. And I think that some attempts by rulemaking by the federal government to justify tuition increases, to publish those tuition increases so that students understand the sticker costs, all of these are going to contribute to a much better dialogue about what it is exactly that we're getting for our money and why is it that tuition continues to rise. And then, you know, on top of that carrot, which is that positive competition, I think there's also a role for a stick. You know, the Obama Department of Education last year passed the gainful employment rule, which follows private, for-profit colleges, that they're going to face sanctions if too many of their students are graduating and not able to pay off their loans. And so what that means is, you know, if the college is not preparing people for gainful employment over and above what they're charging the people, that college is not going to be able to stay in business and accept federal student aid. So I think that there's a big role for regulation. There's a role for innovation to try to have new models that are more affordable for higher education. But it's wrong to say that we just have to throw up our hands and accept the status quo, because I believe that there are way too many people that are really suffering.
Anya, once again, that website that you mentioned about student loan forgiveness for people who are interested in following up?
Yeah, I would recommend people check out studentloanborrowerassistance.org.
Studentloanborrowerassistance.org, a very catchy
yeah. yeah.
website title.
Right.
Anya Kamenetz, senior writer for Fast Company and the author of DIYU and Generation Debt. Thanks so much for joining us. You helped a lot of people today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Coming up next, the state of Iranian cinema and the story behind the film, This Is Not a Film. Stay with us.